is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The region continues to trend in the wrong direction. Armed groups continue to expand their presence as well as their capabilities and their violence.
That's Michael Gonzalez, U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, talking about efforts to bring peace to the Sahel. Details coming up. Also, there is a new vaccine in the fight against COVID-19. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Frustrations are growing in and around Mali, where regional and international efforts to speed up the interim government's transition to democratic elections appear to be at a dead end. Still, key players from Europe and the United States are refusing to give up, warning what is at stake goes much beyond Mali itself. More from VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Selden.
Days after thousands took to the streets of Bamako, protesting sanctions and telling the rest of the world to back off, Mali's foreign minister hammered home the message during a visit to Mauritania. Mali will not abandon dialogue, he said, but the rest of the world should take steps to better understand. Despite the military government's refusal to let go of power, EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, tells VOA she's confident eventually it will relent.
The pressure will be so strong that at one point they will have to come to a compromise.
For now, European Union officials are adamant about keeping tough sanctions in place, hoping a compromise comes sooner rather than later. But Mali's military rulers appear to be digging in, demanding a review of defense cooperation agreements with France and welcoming help from Russia, with reports that mercenaries from Russia's Wagner group are now on the ground, a move EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, describes as a step too far.
Cannot be accepted for the risk of having a domino effect in other countries, for instance. The countries of the region, the countries of the G5 Sahel, for instance, they fear that this could be an example that might somehow give the idea of copying the situation to other countries.
The possibility that other dominoes could fall has the attention of U.S. officials, like Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Michael Gonzalez.
Despite a decade of robust international investments, the region continues to trend in the wrong direction. Armed groups continue to expand their presence as well as their capabilities and their violence.
For years, the focus has been on a military solution. U.S. and French forces especially have been conducting training and counterterrorism missions across the Sahel to beat back groups fighting under the banner of Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. But now the focus is shifting. International military efforts are being scaled back, making room for greater focus on development and governance, something the U.S. hopes to accelerate by pursuing full membership in the Sahel Alliance, a grouping that brings together the United Nations, the World Bank, and multiple other countries. The question for analysts, like CSIS Africa Program Director Mvemba Dizolele, is will the citizens of countries like Mali buy it?
How do you promote local ownership? How do you promote local solutions if it's heavily tilted towards the internationals?
Western officials say they are hopeful despite the unabating anger by many in the region, now front and center in Mali. Jeff Selden, VOA News.
A German military transport plane carrying around 80 German peacekeepers on the way to Niger was denied overflight rights over Mali. A spokesperson for military air operations said the A400M Airbus carrying the soldiers had initially received permission to fly through Mali's airspace. The spokesperson said the sudden ban is currently being clarified. Malian authorities recently began restricting flight movements of the United Nations MINUSMA peacekeeping mission in the country after Economic Community of West Africa's states imposed sanctions on the military leaders who seized power and delayed elections in Mali. MINUSMA forces, as well as French aircraft, regularly fly over the region as part of efforts to fight an Islamist insurgency that has spread from Mali to the other Sahel countries. The UN's new Western Sahara envoy, Staffan de Mistura, continued his shuttle diplomacy in North Africa to promote a political solution to the Western Sahara conflict based on UNSC Resolution 2602, which called for the resumption of four-way roundtable talks between Morocco, Algeria, Mauritania, and the pro-independence Polisario Front. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi discussed with William Lawrence, professor of political science at the America University in Washington, whether there are any reasons to be optimistic the envoy will succeed.
No, it's great that he's begun his work, and the issue does need a lot of attention, and Staffan de Mistura is giving it the attention that needs and in the way that it needs it. But as you noted, there's been no significant forward motion on this issue since the early 1990s, and there's little likelihood that he'll be able to overcome intransigence on this issue, particularly from the Moroccan side, which scored a big win last December, a year ago. The UN resolution, the format of the talks is fine, but if you look back at the history of previous roundtable talks in Long Island, people just show up at the talks and repeat their country's talking points. And the people at the table are not usually empowered to negotiate anything, nor are they motivated or incentivized to negotiate anything because both sides derive more from the hard position rather than a deal. And furthermore, Polisario and by extension Algeria are just trying to pressure Morocco to respect the previous negotiated 1991 deal, which Morocco has claimed time and again since then is a dead letter. Morocco builds its position off of the 2007 U.S. announcement that the Moroccan autonomy plan was serious, credible, and realistic. And that was part of an internal U.S. government decision that the recognition of the positive aspects of the autonomy plan was a better position for the U.S. government than simply recognizing Morocco's claim. Fast forward to 2021, and the Trump administration went ahead and did what the Bush administration in 2007 was unwilling to do, which was simply recognize the Moroccan claim. That makes the U.S. the only country in the world out of about 200 countries that has recognized Morocco's claim. There are about 20 countries that are putting consulates into Western Sahara without recognizing Morocco's claim. And now it seems the U.S. Congress is seeking to put a hold on building a U.S. consulate there, even though they inaugurated sort of a virtual consulate, because the Biden administration is walking back a bit from the Trump administration position.
De Mistura met the leader of the Polisario Front, and he told the envoy that his organization sought a just and fair solution that guarantees the Sahrawi people their right to self-determination and full national independence, while Morocco sees the former Spanish colony as its sovereign territory and has offered limited autonomy but rejected calls for independence. How would any UN envoy reconcile the two extreme positions?
He won't and he can't for the reasons I just said. But if a UN envoy was to do it, it would be, I think, following the solution I'll tell you now. I've been working this issue for about 30 years, and both sides reject what I'm about to say, but it is the middle position. And I think a middle position is what is sometimes referred to as power sharing. It's clear that an independent Sahrawi government would be willing to work with Morocco on things like its borders, its national defense, its currency, whereas it's clear under most iterations of the Moroccan autonomy plan that the Sahrawi should control everything in the interior of that territory, so education and health and social policy and local administration. And so the deal to be made debate has always been, you know, how can Morocco help with the exterior aspects of what the territory needs in terms of, you know, relationships with the region and self-defense? And then the Sahrawis wouldn't control the interior. As one former UN envoy told me, in the end, the argument is just over the flag and the postage stamp, meaning who has ultimate control of the territory. And while I don't quite agree with that characterization, it is true that the administrative solution I just proposed could be workable. It's just neither side wants to give up anything in terms of sovereignty. The real issue is the Moroccan interior police, who are rough with the population in Western Sahara. And I've long said that as Morocco democratizes and improves its human rights record, we'll eventually have a solution because Moroccan interior police will no longer do what they do. Moroccan pro-democracy and pro-human rights organizations have begun to work in the territories. There isn't enough of that yet, and they haven't had enough of an impact yet. But as Morocco gets better in terms of democratic praxis and respect for human rights, we'll get closer to a solution.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy. A stampede at a Christian prayer gathering in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, has killed at least 29 people. Police spokesperson Moses Carter told the French news agency AFP today the death toll could increase, adding children were among the dead. Media reports are saying the disaster occurred sometime Wednesday night or early Thursday morning. Details are still sketchy. The gathering, known in Liberia as a crusade, was being held in a football field in New Crew Town, a working-class suburb in Monrovia. Such gatherings typically attract thousands of people in Liberia, a highly religious country where a majority of the populations are Christians. Local media reports suggest that robbers wielding knives and machetes attacked the worshippers, suggesting that this may have caused the stampede. One of the world's top management consulting firms implicated in multi-million dollar corruption in South Africa has withdrawn from the country's biggest business organization. A report by a commission of inquiry into graft that happened under former President Jacob Zuma linked Bain and Company to corruption at the South African Revenue Service. The firm, with offices around the globe but headquartered in the United States, says it had no intention of harming the tax collection agency advising the Zuma administration from 2014 to 2018. Darren Taylor has more.
The Commission of Inquiry says Jacob Zuma's government paid Bain millions of dollars to restructure the South African Revenue Service, SARS. It says Bain recommended that some highly experienced tax officials be forced out. After these people lost their jobs, people Zuma appointed allegedly stole billions from SARS. Economist Dr. Iraj Abedian points out that another inquiry linked Bain to corruption 4 years ago. So he says the Business Leadership SA or BLSA organization's apparent pressure on the US firm to leave its fold is way overdue.
Bain's Co. is not the only complicit entity. There are other members, as we speak, whose name have come up, and Business Leadership South Africa needs to exercise ethical and principled leadership by suspending all those members who are suspect. The onus and responsibility is on these members to clear their names before they qualify to be called corporate leaders, captains of industry, or any such title.
On its website, BLSA lists two of its core activities as protecting the integrity of state institutions and demonstrating that business is central in addressing poverty, unemployment, economic injustice, and transformation. Abedian says some of the association's members, including Bain and other international consulting firms, appear to have done exactly the opposite of BLSA's stated values. The companies that got contracts from the Zuma government deny they knowingly cooperated with what investigators call the State Capture Project. Some of the companies blame individual managers for financial crimes. Abedian says this is unconscionable.
These corporates, especially these global corporates or big local corporates, cannot distance themselves and say, sorry, it was a bad apple in the team. The guys in New York and London, they received hundreds of millions of dollars of dividend. Bain and Co. cannot say, oh, it was a bad CEO, but they banked the dividend that came from South Africa and the bonuses and so on.
After the commission report came out, Bain issued a statement saying, we accept that through various lapses in leadership and governance, Bain South Africa became an unwitting participant in a process that inflicted serious damage on SARS. The company apologized but said it does not accept that its employees knowingly participated in efforts to damage the tax agency. It said the company had no motive to damage the agency and did not intend to do so. State prosecutors are pursuing cases against some politicians who allegedly colluded with Zuma, but there's no indication they're after any of the corporations allegedly involved. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In South Africa, Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF leader Julius Malema yesterday visited several restaurants in Johannesburg to check the ratio of South African citizens on staff versus foreign nationals. In a statement to the media, the EFF said the visit was meant to ensure that foreign nationals are not exploited and that South Africans are employed to a satisfactory level. The party accuses the hospitality industry of employing more foreign nationals than locals and wants that reversed. Tuso Kumalo was among the journalists on the scene and reports from Johannesburg.
Malema's visit started at the Cream Restaurant at the Mall of Africa in Midrand, where journalists recorded a bitter exchange of words with one of the managers.
Yes, I made an appointment to come see you today.
In what capacity are you here?
I'm a member of parliament.
Okay,
that's number
have you
one.
Got an official sanction from parliament to be here?
I don't need a sanction to be here.
Here an official government business?
I'm not government. You see the arrogance you are displaying, my man.
No, we're not going to meet with the delegation. Julius, I'm sorry, I can't.
And there was a resident on FN because we have appointment with you.
The Economic Freedom Fighters EFF leader was accompanied by party leadership and a handful of supporters, accused the restaurant owners of causing a rift between South Africans and foreign nationals.
They are dividing our people. Because when you are here and you are told people who don't come from here are the ones who are taking your jobs, you're already going to attack them. So all we want is South Africans and African brothers and sisters to work together.
Malema has changed his stance on foreign workers. The change comes after local government elections and ahead of the national election in 2024. This is what he said at a news conference after last year's November 1 elections.
I will never take a platform and denounce Africans. I will never do it. If it means votes are going, let them go. Now I'm prepared to go home. When I see a Nigerian or a Zimbabwean or a Congolese, I see myself. I'm not prepared to take a platform and say foreigners must go home.
But he denies accusations that his party now is changing its stance to get votes from disillusioned South Africans who have long accused foreign nationals of taking their jobs.
African brothers and sisters have a right to work here, but it should not be at the expense of South Africans. Foreigners should know when they are here, they are at home. We are saying to them, let's work together.
South Africa has one of the world's highest rates of unemployment, with almost 35% of the population unemployed. Migrants from elsewhere in Africa make up about 4% of the population, but about 7% of the workforce, often in low-wage or semi-skilled jobs. Following Malema's announcement last week that his party leadership would visit restaurants, social media has been awash with pictures of locals invading businesses, marketplaces and vending spaces, forcing foreign nationals to pack and go. Legal expert Ntabiseng Dubazana says the action is illegal without a court order and could lead to xenophobic violence.
I think we're already on the verge of xenophobic attacks already happening. What is happening now with Julius Malema might just be the ultimate catalyst to make it go over the edge.
Ngabuto Mabena, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Community in South Africa organization, says Malema and his group could have addressed their concerns in a better way.
We are still following to understand what this means. We would have hoped that they will engage employers directly without really going to the workplaces or to the restaurants, but that's the option that they've chosen. So ours is to follow and see the reaction by the anti-migrant movements.
EFF leaders across the country were out doing similar inspections, with some of them insisting they want food outlets to employ South Africans only. The government has remained quiet on the issue. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nigeria is to a 2-0 victory over Guinea-Bissau in the Africa Cup of Nations yesterday, earning 9 points in Group D. Nigeria had already won the pool before kickoff yesterday, becoming the only team to enter the second round with 3 wins. In the other competition yesterday, Egypt beat its neighbor Sudan 1-0 in a labored performance, ensuring that it progresses to the knockout stage in the tournament, finishing second behind Nigeria in Group D with 6 points. Sudan, with only 1 point so far in the tournament, has been eliminated. Today is the last day of group play. Ivory Coast takes on Algeria, Sierra Leone faces Equatorial Guinea, Gambia plays against Tunisia, while Mali and Mauritania face off. The round of 16 kicks off Sunday. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokwila Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UK.